Tonight we're going to continue with our Halachas of the Workplace series, and what we're going to discuss tonight is not as much what you do in the workplace, but what you do with the check that you got from the workplace when you get home at the end of the month, and you want to figure out how to give your Maaser. So tonight we're going to talk about the Halachas of Maaser, at least tonight, and we might talk about it one other week. We'll see at the end of the shiur. Maaser is a very unusual mitzvah, more unusual than any other mitzvah in the rest of the Torah for one specific reason. We'll start like this. The Pasuk says, not regarding what we're going to talk about this evening, it's mostly Maaser Ksafim for the money that you earn, but of course, Midaraisa, there was not as much talk about Maaser Ksafim as much as there was about Maaser on the produce that you grow in your field, your tevua, and the other things that you grow. It says the Pasuk in Re'ei, Aser ta Aser, Es kol tvuas zarecha. You have to give maaser on all of your tvua that you grow. And it's a double language. This is aser to aser. And we know that the word aser, ayin sin resh, same word as osher. So it says the Gemara, aser b'shvil shetit asher. Give maaser so you could become wealthy. So here we have Chazal telling us black on white, learned out from an extra word in the Chumash itself, that this is a way for us to become wealthy. That's A. And B, we have a pasuk in Issa D'Oraisa, in Parshas Veschanan, that says, Lo tenasu es Hashem Elokeichem. You're not allowed to test Hashem. And that means if I get up in the morning and I say, okay, Hashem, I'm willing to get out of bed and go to shul and put on my tefillin and make it to minyan this morning, if you guarantee that I will, you know, get a 95 in my midterm, if you guarantee that I will, you know, pass the CPA exam, whatever the deal is, that's usher, possibly d'oraisa for me to do. With one exception, as it states in Malachi Perek Gimel, says the pasuk in Malachi, Haviu es kol ha-ma'asar beis ha-otzar, bring all your ma'aser to the storehouse, uvichanuni na bezos, and test me, not please, with this, says Hashem, im lo eftach lachem es arubos ha-shamayim, if I don't open up for you the storehouses of the Shamayim, v'harikosi lachem, and I'll pour upon you bracha ad blidai, an inordinate amount of bracha. So here we have a pasuk in Malachi that says, b'chanuni na bazos, you're allowed to test me regarding maaser, and if you've ever wondered, does it work or not, we'll try it, and I found that it does work. You literally can test Hashem, I will give maaser, and I want you to, you know, I want to see the return clearly, and if not, I'm not going to give maaser. You could have that chutzpah dika attitude, only regarding this one mitzvah in the Torah. And this pasuk that I just read to you from Malachi, interestingly enough, makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch. The Rama, in the beginning of Hilchas Tzedakah, says, Asu l'nasos HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you're not allowed to test Hashem ki im bedavar zeh, except regarding Tzedakah, and then stuck in general. And then he says, V'yesh Omrim, there's another opinion, Dafka b'nesinas maaser, that not only by tzedakah, you're not allowed, only by giving maaser specifically are you allowed to test Hashem. So we have before us, that we're about to sort of open up this topic of maaser, is an incredible, almost imperative, that there's an opportunity here that we don't have by any other mitzvah in the Torah. And I remember Rabbi Rapp from Yeshiva pointing out to me that because of this, maaser is the ultimate demonstration of emunah in Hashem for us. Because how many other places do we have in our lives that I could really see that Hashem, you know, does something as I command? You know, in the old generation, the great tzaddikim, they could say this, and Hashem will, you know, tzaddik goes to Hashem mekayim, they could see Hashem with a certain level of gilui. We don't have that now. This is the only area, Rabbi Rapp pointed out, that you could literally test Hashem. What would happen if a person doesn't give them ma'aser? That just shows that a little bit they lack that emuna in the psukim, in chazal, in the psukim. It's an explicit pasuk. So that's why this is a very unique mitzvah, and hopefully this perspective will give us a little bit of the koach to take this learning seriously. And we're going to find some, not so many chumras, we're actually going to find a lot of kulas, and to understand why we're going to have a lot of kulas, we have to understand what the nature of this mitzvah of Maaser is. We're going to spend a few minutes on this, because if we understand the nature of the mitzvah of Maaser a little bit better, then a lot of halachos will fall into place once we know the foundations. What's the source for giving ma'aser? So we have the source before, aser to aser et kol tzvat zerecha, which is to give ma'aser from your actual produce, from your wheat. What about from my wealth? That's called ma'aser k'safim. Well, let's start off like this. Is ma'aser k'safim d'oraisa or is it d'rabbanan? What do you say? Mide? Araisa, what? Mide araisa? Mide rabbanan? That's just this. You just talk to be different, right? So you're all right, but none of you got what most posts can hold. Well, that's certainly. Some hold araisa, some hold rabbanan, most posts can hold. What's left? What? Excellent. Who said that? Oh, yeah, yes. Most posts can hold it's not a chiyuv d'oraisa. It's not even a chiyuv d'rabbanan. Most posts are going to hold that it's a minhag. We're going to see where this minhag comes from. But first, let's give each of these positions a chance to explain themselves. Let's first look at the opinion that says d'oraisa. Now, if it's going to be d'oraisa, we're going to have a lot of stringencies come out of it, of course. And a lot of a format is going to come out that will help us understand when something's d'oraisa, it's obviously going to be patterned after the mitzvah of giving. Where do we have a mitzvah of ma'aser in the Torah? Well, we have two. We have ma'aser, we have a number of ma'asers, but ma'aser sheni is given every year. That's given to the Levium. What might be more applicable to the ma'aser that we give now, when we give ma'asers to poor people primarily, so that would parallel ma'aser ani, which was given on the seven-year cycle. The way it worked is every year of this seven-year cycle went like this. Year 1 through 6, you had to give ma'aser. Year 7 is Shemitah, there's no ma'aser at all. Nothing. No ma'aser, no truma, no matana. Anyone can take whatever they want. No gifts have to be given. During those 6 years, every one of those 6 years, you have to give 10% to the Levium. That's called ma'aser rishon. After that first 10% to the Levium, then there's a second 10% that depends on what year you're in of the six-year cycle. Year 1 and 2, skip 3. And year 4 and 5 is ma'aser sheni. Ma'aser sheni is for yourself. You take it, you put it in your knapsack, you walk to Yerushalayim, you eat it with your family in Yerushalayim. Year 3 and 6 of the seven-year cycle, that's Ma'aser Ani, that has to be given, not to yourself, not even in Yerushalayim, you give that to Aniyim. So that would probably be the Ma'aser that we're trying to imitate with our giving Ma'aser on our wealth nowadays. We want to imitate that Ma'aser Ani that we have, and we'll see as the shiur unfolds how this is going to come out. So what's the source that could perhaps suggest that giving ma'aser on your wealth, your money that you earn, is going to be daraisa? The pasuk that I opened the shiur with, aser ta'aser et kol tvu'at zar'echa, tvu'a is your wheat, your produce. So that's not going to help me nowadays. I live in an apartment in Washington Heights. The only thing that I know that grew in Washington Heights, did I tell this story? I don't think I told this story. I told it in shiur recently. There was an apartment, an independent housing program, meaning it's a YU apartment, but it's not actually a dorm. And there was a leak in the shower, so they called the facilities department to come and fix the leak. And as the facilities department was leaving, they noticed a glow coming out from a closet. And they were wondering, why is there a glow coming from... Did I tell a story recently? No, okay. I told it in my shiur, I think, last week. Why is there a glow coming from the closet? So they open the closet door. The kids were in class, I assume, and facility just fixed the shower. And they noticed an ultraviolet lamp growing certain substances that, according to New York State law, are somewhat...
illegal?
Illegal would be a very good word. So they dealt with this. They called security, facilities called security. There was a wonderful, exciting rendezvous of powers that be, and that was I wasn't involved, but that was, you know, as far as we get to growing things in our apartments in Washington Heights. Except also, my son came home with a lima bean plant, and it lasted about a week or two until it got thrown on the floor. So tuat zarecha we don't have. What do we have in terms of our wealth? So there's the Tosfos in Maseches Tanis Daf Tes brings us a Sifri. And the Sifri takes that pasuk and points out, there's another, the pasuk I was just talking about, it says tevuah, and points out a fine point in the words. It says, "Aser ta'aser es kol tu'as zarecha." If I was Hashem, and I wanted to write this pasuk a little bit, we have an editor here. You're an editor. So if you had to take this sentence and make it a little bit shorter, "Aser ta'aser es kol tu'as zarecha." What words could you cross out? It would be saying the same thing. Eskol. Aser ta'aser tu'as zarecha. Give ma'aser from the produce of your field. What's the extra words eskol? Says the Sifri that Tosis brings, eskol is to include l'rabos, all the other wealth that you earn, ribis, if you charge interest to a guy, your prakmati, a business, the kol sha'ar rivachim, and all the other profits that you might make in interpersonal commerce. Those two extra words in the pasuk are not talking about tvua. Eskol, those extra two words, kol always comes to include something additional, and that would be the source that you have to give meiser, presumably midaraisa, even on your non-produce, non-food, agricultural-related wealth accumulation. If this position would be true, so we would probably follow the laws of Maaser Ani. Whatever halachas apply to Maaser Ani, we would say those laws have to apply to Maaser that we give on our wealth. One of them, for example, would be who has to get this money? Who has to be the recipient of Maaser Ani? Only somebody who is an ani. So you'll have to define ani. It can't go to any other use. Only an ani and somebody who is halakhically is defined as an ani. And yes, the halakha does define for us who is considered a poor person. The Mishnah that tells us that somebody who has 200 zuz, whatever 200 zuz means, 200 zuz was, let's say, it's actually the same amount as a ksuva. What's the idea behind the ksuva? Rashi says 200 zuz in a ksuva is because that's as much money a person needs to live for a year. On some basic level to live for a year. So 200 zuz qualifies a poor person. You have to have enough money that you can live for a year. Less than that, if you don't have enough earnings to have your minimum expenses for the year, that qualifies you as an ani. You could take meiser, you could take tzedakah. More than that, you can't. So that's what would come out if we assume that meiser nowadays, meiser ksafim, is daraisa, paralleling meiser ani, in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, when we had all the different Meisers, Meiser Ani in year 3 and 6. Now, what would be the difference between Meiser Ani and, if we say there's a Mitzvah D'Oraisa, and there's another pasuk in the Torah called giving Tzedakah? Is it the same Mitzvah? Is it a different Mitzvah? Is the Mitzvah of Meiser Ani just telling you how much money of tzedakah you should give? So there's one pasuk that says, give tzedakah. It's a pasuk. Patoch tiftaches yadcha l'achicha avyon, something like that. I might be making things up. But you have to give tzedakah. And this pasuk says, meiser. So it's just telling me how much that other mitzvah is supposed to, how much that other pasuk is supposed to be. But it's all one mitzvah? Or these two independent mitzvahs? The answer is that if it would be daraisa to give meiser, it would be two separate mitzvahs. Tzedakah only applies when there's actually a poor person in front of you extending their hand, asking for a handout. If I come to knock on your door and say, I'm raising money for a family in Eretz Yisrael, I'm raising money for a neighbor of mine, I'm raising money for a whole tzedakah fund, for chickens for Shabbos, and you give me money, you are not obligated in terms of the mitzvah tzedakah. The mitzvah tzedakah would obligate you if a poor person was standing in front of your door and saying, can I have some money? Meiser, if we assume it would be daraisa, would be that you have to separate 10% of your wealth to give away. That's irrelative of there being a poor person in front of you or not being a poor person in front of you. So that's distinction A, that tzedakah is only when there's an ani before you. And meiser is just a quantity you have to give regardless of who's before you. You have to seek out the people to give the monies to. That's not the mitzvah of tzedakah. Let's say you're a poor person yourself. This is going to be very important to the halacha for many of us. We'll see why soon. But if you're a poor person, do you have to give meiser? You do not have to give meiser. If you're a poor person, do you have to give tzedakah? It is clear that a poor person is obligated to give tzedakah. If a poor person is so poor that he has to take tzedakah, does he have to give tzedakah? Yes. Halacha is, if in the terms of Hilchas Tzedakah, if he's poor enough that he has to take tzedakah, he still is that obligated to give tzedakah from the tzedakah that he himself took. How much? So here there's a halacha that we learn, that's the Shulchan Aruch writes, that every Jew, regardless of their wealth, regardless of their social stature, wealth, you know, financial health, they all have to give 1/3 of a shekel per year. That's not a lot of money. That's not a lot of money. But if it's just not in your Weltanschauung of giving stuff because you're always taking, it's just something to think about. So if we just had the mitzvah tzedakah, we would be obligated to give 1/3 of a shekel, and we are. Every Jew has to give at least 1/3 of a shekel. But the mitzvah of meiser for a poor person would not obligate them to give a penny all year long. Yes? Let me rephrase that. I can fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah by sending money through an intermediary. But we don't think of tzedakah so much in this thought process, but do you know that if somebody, a poor person, asks you for money, and you have money and you say no, you were mevatel mitzvah saseh, it's like I wouldn't put on tefillin this morning, and B, you violated a lota saseh, of lota ametz et levavcha, you violated a lota, it's like you ate treif, by not giving him tzedakah. That's a chiyuv. That's a real chiyuv. A chiyuv, a say to do it, and a violation of lo tasei. If you don't do it, that's heavy duty. That violation of not fulfilling those chiyuvim won't apply if it's through a shaliach. If there's a third party. Of course, if you send your money, you send a check to Yad Eliezer, to Odi Yosef Chai, and they give it to the gabbai, and the gabbai gives it to the social worker, and the social worker gives it to the man or woman or children who need it. Of course, you fulfill the mitzvah tzedakah. But the obligation that requires you not to have a choice, you can't say no. If you have money in your pocket, and there's a bona fide poor person who asks you for tzedakah, and you know that they're poor, you don't have permission to say no thank you next time. You don't have that permission. If you don't do it, you violated an asay, you didn't fulfill an asay, like me not putting on tefillin, you violated a lota asay. Of course, nowadays, we don't always know who's poor. And therefore, nowadays, since we don't know if somebody knocks on your door, they just might be wearing a long coat and a big hat. That doesn't necessarily mean that they're poor, and you might not be obligated to give them because it might not be. You might not know that they're poor. They might not. You might not have that chiyuv, and they have to prove to you that they're poor first. But if they could prove to you that they're poor and they're Jewish, then you have a mitzvah to say d'oraisa you can't wiggle out of. Yes.
So non-Jews on the subway.
That was last week. Non-Jews on the subway. Non-Jews on the subway, 2 weeks ago, sorry. Non-Jews on the subway is a different question. That's a question of lo techane. We said that there's an issa d'oraisa to give gifts to non-Jews if you don't know them, an issa d'oraisa. And we saw that Rabbanu made an exception, mepnei darkei shalom, that mefarnesim aniye ovdei kochavim im aniye Yisrael. You're permitted to sustain, to provide for goyim, poor of the Goyim, alongside the poor of the Jewish people, because if we don't, then the Goyim won't like us. Oh, that was 2 weeks ago. Okay, so now you remember. Great. Yes. Oh, yeah. Okay, somebody else? Rachel? If you can't tell, they're not obligated to give them. If it's clear they are poor, then you are. If they're Jewish and they're poor, then you're obligated to. If they ask you, if they're just waiting for you to put money in a pushka, you don't have to. But if they come to you and ask you, you know that they're Jewish and you know that they are poor, you do have to give them. And they ask you?
Yeah.
And they ask you, and you know, I mean, not everybody dressed in rags has to be dressed in rags. But if it's clear to you that they are, then, and they ask you, yes, you do have to give them money. Yes. Meiser, you wouldn't have to. Meiser, fine. Meiser, if you were poor, you wouldn't have to. A poor tzedakah, a poor person does have to give.
To be obligated.
Okay. To be obligated, that the Torah will say, Chani, you must give this person. That's only if you know that they're poor. Because if you don't know that they're poor, then they have to prove that they're poor if they want to extract money from you.
There's no.
Not when it comes to money.
Okay.
No. Whenever we have a financial, when I want to extract money from you, there's always the rule of burden of proof is on the one who wants to take the money, to collect the money. Yes?
So it doesn't really have a lot of questions
about
say,
Yerushalayim,
like,
you
bump
into, like... So in Yerushalayim, if you bump into people and you know that, do you know that they're poor?
I'm saying, like, a lot of people have to.
They look poor. Do you know that they're poor?
They have a tzedakah. I don't know if it's real or not.
So if you have the time to invest, if you know that it's true and that they are poor, then you have to give them. If you don't know that they're poor, so you don't have to give them. If you have the right, I think you have the right to assume that some of these two dot could be forged, could be dated, you know, 17 years ago. That you have the right to be suspicious. You have every right to be suspicious. They have to prove to you otherwise. But if you know for sure that they're poor, even though there's a guy, you know, there's a guy in your neighborhood who's very poor, and he knocks on your door and says, you know what, Shabbos is coming, I'm low, I just don't have money to buy challahs. Could you help me out? You have a chiyuv d'oraisa to help them out. You don't have, it's not a choice. If you want to be, if you're in a good mood, you're feeling generous, you're feeling magnanimous, no, you're obligated to. Yeah. Purim is a different halacha. Purim is kol ha-poshet yad nos mimo. Purim, we don't even investigate to see if they're worthy. Anybody who says, can I have money, you just give them. And that's where the whole inyan of daf, the special koch of tefillah comes on Purim, because look, if we have a mitzvah to just give without looking into people, investigating, so Hashem's going to work the same way. If I ask for something, Hashem will give it to me without analyzing, do I really deserve it, do I not really deserve it? That's the whole idea of the special school of davening on Purim specifically comes from, because kol ha-poshet yad, anyone who extends their hand, no sin lo. You give without even investigating as to their worthiness. Yes?
Get staka, does it only have to be money? Can it be?
Great question. The answer is no. You could give staka with cash equivalent. You could give staka, and we'll talk about with services also. That we'll talk about in a little while. Okay. This is all the discussion that we were talking about now, comparing the mitzvah of staka to the mitzvah of maaser. That's only if you assume that everything I said about staka was correct, that it's only obligatory if you know who the person is and they are poor and you are obligated. That's true about staka. Maser, well, we said this opinion that we brought, Tosfos brings a Sifri, it sounds like it would be Daraisa. But we said that there are not all the opinions hold that it's Daraisa. There is another opinion that we'll see now, that it's only a chiyuv derabbanan. But wait a second, didn't the pasuk say eskol? Aren't there those two extra words that sound like it's a daraisa? I said before that there's a sifri. Sifri is like a mishnah, sort of. And the sifri writes that the extra two words in the psukim, eskol tvasarecha, that you have to give maaser on eskol, is includes even maaser on your wealth, on your commerce, not just on your food. So how can anyone say it's derabbanan? How could they not go off this sifri? So this is something that happens in Shas very often when you have a pasuk for a halacha, but we know that the halacha is derabbanan. We say that that pasuk isn't really the source. That pasuk is a pasuk that the rabbanim, you know, sort of pinned this halacha derabbanan onto so that they have a way to remember it. That's called asmechuha. They were masmichit. They sort of pinned it on a certain pasuk, even though the pasuk is not really a chiyuv. That's this second opinion. It's the opinion quoted in the Shas Teshuvos of the Maharil, one of the late Rishonim dash early Achronim for Ashkenaz. That's the Maharil. So the Maharil, probably call him a Rishon. The Maharil says that The mitzvah of Meister, again, on our wealth that we have nowadays, is only midrabanan. And that pasuk that I mentioned to you before is just an asmachta, what we call an asmachta, sort of just a way to pin a halacha derabanan on some specific pasuk, but not that that pasuk is literally obligating me to fulfill the mitzvah. And as I mentioned before, we don't paskin like the first way, that is deraisa. We don't paskin like this maril. Rather, we paskin like the Maram Rotenberg, one of the Rishonim, cited by many, many of the poskim, the Pesachei Tshuva on the Shulchan Aruch, the Bach on the Tur, and many, many of the poskim hold that it is only a minhag. Correct. That's how we paskim. Now, obviously, you could imagine that if it's not a chiyuv midaraisa, it's not a chiyuv midarabanan, it's only a minhag, that means it's not even a chiyuv. We just started with the first important step in understanding Hilchos Meiser. Hilchos Meiser Ksafim is not a minhag, is not a halacha, is not a chiyuv. I'm sorry, it is a halacha, it is not a chiyuv. One is not obligated, me'ikar hadin, fundamentally, to give Meiser Ksafim if they don't want to. Of course, there are shittas that hold it's deraisa, you're forgetting about those. Of course, there are those who say it's derabbanan, you're forgetting about those. But bottom line, rock bottom is, the main halacha that we follow is that it's not a chiyuv. There's no chiyuv to give Meiser Ksafim, but it's a minhag. Where is this minhag? How old is this minhag? Ashkenazi? Sephardi? It's 500 years old? It's 1,000 years old? It's a minhag from the time of the Mishnah? It's 2,000 years old? Time of David HaMelech? 2,500 years old? 2,800 years old? Well, this is the oldest minhag that I've ever discovered, that I've ever learned about. This is the oldest minhag. When did this minhag start? Could anyone guess? What? This is the minhag from the Avos. Yes. By all three of the Avos. I spoke about this once in the shul, the idea of Maaser Ksav, and I pointed out one of the Bereishis parshiyos. If you try to find the common denominator of all the Avos, there aren't so many common... I mean, you could figure out a few common denominators, but one of them is that they all gave Maaser. Specifically Maaser. Not just Tzedakah, Maaser. Avraham comes back from the Milchama of the four against the five, with Lot and with Lut, and the pasuk says regarding the Lut, Vayitein lo ma'aser mikol to Malki Tzedek. Malki Tzedek was the Kohen, the Kel Elyon, and so Avram gives him Meister. Yitzchak, pasuk by Yitzchak says, Vayizra Yitzchak, he planted wherever he planted, Vayimtza bashana hahi me'ashe arim, 100 times the normal quantity. Rashi brings Chazal, why is it important that we know what 100 times the normal quantity? Why is it important to know that number? Chazal explained, because they had to know for Meisr purposes. Yaakov is explicit. Kol asher titein li aser asren alach. He makes a deal with Hashem. Whatever you give me, I'm going to give Meisr on. So we have a minhag from Avram, a minhag from Yitzchak Avinu, a minhag from Yaakov Avinu to give Meisr on Ksafim, right? The loot that Avraham grabbed from the kings wasn't wheat and grapes and olives. It was loot. It's true, Yitzchak did plant wheat, so that's not talking about Maaser Ksav specifically. Yaakov also. He says, Kol asher titein li, whatever you're going to give me, I'll give Maaser on. So that's clearly a minhag on Maaser Ksavim in general, and that is the source. So it's a 3,500 years, give or take, old minhag? 4,000 years? Well, let's think. Avram was born in what year? 1948, and now we're in 5,771, so that's 3,820 years, give or take. That's about, well, that's when he was born. So let's say 3,700 years old this minhag is. So if any of you find a minhag that old, please let me know, but I don't think there is any that I could think about. Have an idea? No? Okay. Now that we say that it's a minhag and not a Chiyuv d'oraisa, not even a Chiyuv d'rabbanan, let's come out with a few important halachas, and now we're going to really start the halacha aspect of halach l'maaser with maaser ksafim. What binds me to do a minhag? Well, following the tradition of my family, that's one. That's the Chiyuv of Al Titosh Torah Simecha. Shema b'ni Musar Avich v'Al Titosh Torah Simecha. That's a Chiyuv to follow minhag, as funny as it sounds. But more importantly, in terms of me, myself, what binds me to do something that I do? The fact that I accept upon myself to do it. What is that called? That's a neder. If I make a neder and accept it upon myself to do something, that's what obligates me. If I never made a neder, if I never, you know, accept it upon myself to do something, then I don't have to do it. Once I accept something as a neder, and that's what binds me, if that's all that binds me to do something, meaning a neder that I make, so I can make that nether however I want to make that nether. If you work for somebody else, you have to work on their terms. If you're working for yourself, you work on your terms. You go into work at 11 in the morning and you leave at 4, because you work for yourself. Same thing with a nether. If the only thing that obligates you is your own conviction, you decide you're going to do it, so you could set up the parameters how you want to do it. That's going to be very important in a lot of halachas that we're going to see. We'll talk about two or three things now, and a few things later. First of all, what do we always want to avoid when we have a nether, when we're dealing with accepting something as a nether? I don't want it that it should become obligatory on me, because what happens if one time I'll be in a situation where I can't do it, I forget to do it, I'm in trouble. So now that it's a nether, I violated a nether. I violated a pasuk in the Torah that says, Lo yachel dvaro, I can't yachel, make chulin, make away with my word. I can't, you know, go back on my word. And if I wouldn't have accepted that neder, I wouldn't have done anything wrong. Now that I made a neder, let's say I make a neder, I'm going to give $10 to tzedakah. If I wouldn't have said anything, so if I gave the $10 to tzedakah, I'll get a mitzvah. If I wouldn't give $10 to tzedakah, then I'd be fine. But now that I made it into a neder, if I don't give that $10 to tzedakah, I'm violating a pasuk from the Torah of lo yachel dvaro. That's always something that we want to avoid. So what do we do to solve that? We say bli neder. Whenever I text them and someone says, can you please do something, I try to answer bli neder, because it doesn't always happen. At least I didn't say I was going to do it. At least with one person in this room, that happened in this past week. So you should, if a person is starting to, let's say you're starting to earn money and you're going to begin paying meiser, this only applies to first time people who are starting, you just graduated graduate school, you're just going to work, so you try to say bli neder. What happens if that's too late? You heard Rabbi Orlean's shiur a month, a year, 2 years, 10 years too late, and you've already been working and giving meiser a number of times. Is it binding on you? You never made a neder that you will. Well, we know that if a person does a good thing, a minhag shel mitzvah, a minhag tova, a number of times, that itself could bind them. So, the Mishnah Berurah says the following distinction. Let's say you did it one time. You were 17 years old, you got your first babysitting job, and you got $30 for the night, and you took $3 and you gave it to tzedakah. And you intended, now I'm 17 years old, I'm going to be starting to make money now, I'm going to start a whole babysitting business, I have a whole career ahead of me, I'm going to be giving ma'aser like my teachers told me I should, like I learned from Bereishis, from Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. So, if you, at that first time, or any one time, intend to continue doing it, that single time is sufficient to lock you in, to obligate yourself, again, one time with a plan of continuing forever, this mahalach of giving ma'aser, that will lock you in. And it's already obligatory, saying bli neder now won't help, you're already locked in. We'll see what to do in a minute. Let's say you just happen to earn $30, and you just happen to say, oh, let me give $3 to tzedakah because I made $30, but not because, oh, I'm now going to continue, I plan on doing this on a regular basis. Well, you will only be considered to be locked in to that practice once you do it three times. So again, if you plan on continuing this good minhag, so even one time will lock you into that minhag. If you just happen to do it once, just happen to do it twice, you're not locked in. When you do a good thing, a good minhag, three times, that locks you in to follow that, and that becomes like a neder, even though you never articulated with your mouth that this is a neder, you never promised, but the minhag tov that you practice three times obligates you. What do you have to do to get out of it? Let's say somebody here intended to do meister in general, or they've done it three times, and for whatever reason, we'll talk about, or we won't talk, whatever reason, a person doesn't want to continue. Could you not continue giving ma'aser? Yes, because it's not midoraisa, it's not midorabanan. But wait, you have a neder that obligates you to do it. How do you get out of a neder? Hataras nedarim. You sit down with a bezdin of three people, and you explain to them why, if you would have known these circumstances, you would never have accepted upon yourself initially that it should be as a neder. Of course, you don't regret doing the ma'aser, you don't regret doing the good things, you just didn't want it to have the efficacy, the potency of a neder, and that's hataras nedarim. What happens more often is the following, though. Chances are, when you were 17 and you got your first babysitting job and you gave ma'aser, you probably thought you had to give ma'aser. In fact, there are probably a number of people in the room who thought that they had to give ma'aser, and they're more than 17. And they might be earning lots of money, and they might have been earning lots of money for a number of years. And now all of a sudden you come and you're coming to be inspired. Rabbi Orlean says, all the ma'aser that you've been giving for the past 3, 4, 5, 6 years was all a big, and I can't say a waste, but you're not obligated to give one penny of that. A shlish is hashekel l'shana you did. But the other $5,000 a year, you weren't obligated to. So, that means that you did something once with a plan of continuing, or three times, just happened to do a good thing, but you were under the wrong premises. You were under the assumption that it's obligatory, when really, it was not obligatory. My friends, for all of those to whom that's appropriate, you are not obligated to continue giving ma'aser. No neder was chal. No neder happened upon you if you did something mistakenly thinking that it was a chiyuv. Anything that I do, let's say I think, what's a good thing to do? Let's say I stand during, I stand during Az Yashu people say. Let's say I stand during Lechadodi, let's say I stand Lechadodi, and I think that you have to stand Lechadodi because the rabbi in my shul stands Lechadodi, and all those other lowlifes in my shul who don't stand, they all are violating the fundamental principles of set down by the Shulchan Aruch, and they're, who knows if they're even Orthodox. The rabbi stands for Lechadodi, I'm going to stand for Lechadodi. My father doesn't, my grandfather doesn't, okay, they don't know what they're doing, the rabbi stands for Lechadodi, I'm going to stand for Lechadodi. And then you realize that there's no reason to stand for Lechadodi. I mean, if you like standing, you can stand. But there's no halachic reason to stand. So you've been doing it for years. Certainly three times you've done it. Certainly one time with the intent of continuing. And now you realize, none of my friends stand. I stand, I'm like a sore thumb. No one else is standing. And it's uncomfortable. My feet aren't what they used to be. I don't want to stand anymore. But it's a neder, isn't it? Nope. Since it was made, since you did that minhag tov, even if you did it three times or 300 times, with the mistaken assumption that it was obligatory, but it wasn't. It was only reshus, and you chose to do a good thing. You are not bound by it, and you don't have to continue doing it. So therefore, any of you who have been giving ma'aser, assuming that you are obligated to, you're no longer obligated to. I will suggest that you continue, but you do not have the obligation. If that's the case, I would suggest that now that you know that you're doing it because it's a minhag, and it's optional, and you're choosing to do it, now is the time to say, I hereby accept upon myself to do Ma'aser Ksafim, the Li Neder. So you could all mutter right now under your breaths, I'm going to try to do Ma'aser, the Li Neder. We're going to come up with a few other things that you should mutter under your breath to keep you safe, and a lot of halachic shadows that are going to come up for the next half hour, next 20 minutes, but we'll see soon.
Do the three times have to be consistent time?
Excellent question. Meaning, let's say, I think so. Yeah, let's say you babysat every Saturday night. The first Saturday night, you're all inspired, and you thought you're going to make millions, you gave. Second time, you're still convinced you're going to make millions, you gave. Then, 3 weeks pass, no one calls you. 4 weeks pass, no one calls you. 5 weeks pass, you get another job. You're like, wow, money doesn't come so easily. I'm not going to give up that 10%. And then, another next week they call, oh, you got another next week, you feel good, you're going to give now. I don't think that will constitute. I think probably three consecutive times. I'm pretty sure. Not positive, but I'm pretty sure. Yes. Any minhag tov. Yes. How do you define a good thing, a minhag tov? So I once heard a very good parameter that I think is very nogei halacha l'maisa. One of the posts that I once discussed with said, if it's a shita that's brought down in the Mishnah Berurah, let's say we don't paskin like it, but there's a shita. It comes up a lot with, let's say, people want to start doing mayim achronim. Let's say, lahalacha, we don't have to do mayim achronim nowadays. They had to do it in the time of Chazal. The Gemara talks about doing mayim achronim because there was this melach sedomis, that a certain kind of salt that if you get in your fingers, you touch your eyes, it could cause vision problems. I've never seen anybody, get vision problems because of Malach Sedomis in the past, 15 years of my knowing about this Malach Sedomis stuff. So many people say you don't have to do it. But of course it does say it in the Shulchan Aruch. It is going to be somewhere in that Mishnah Berurah. So there, if you did it three times, that was a minhag tov. Tov as defined by, again, this is an arbitrary definition, but it is tov because, hey, it's brought down as one of the shitos. So that would be something that would obligate you. And of course, if you said Bli Neder, or probably even had in mind Bli Neder, that would probably be sufficient. Okay. Let's say you knew that it was only a minhag, but you still have done it a number of times. And you didn't listen to Rabbi Orlean at 9:15 at night when he said you should mutter under your breath that I hereby accept Bli Neder. You didn't listen to me. And by the time you give your Meiser check next, your Meiser in a few weeks, you're going to totally forget what I said. You're going to do it. It's not going to be it's not going to have the Bli Neder, and you're going to end up getting yourself back into a Neder. Wait a second. But what did you do Erev Rosh Hashanah, if you did? Let's say you did Hataras Nedarim. Now, Hataras Nedarim, after we do Hataras Nedarim, those of you who do Hataras Nedarim, after you do Hataras Nedarim, there's an extra paragraph, which is not Hataras Nedarim. It's called a Mesiras Modah, giving over of a declaration. What do you declare there? You declare that any Neder that I will make this coming year, or any minhag tov that I do three times. If you remember those words from Atar Sadarim, this is the idea. Any minhag tov, something shalosh pa'amim, I hereby declare right now that it is hereby considered bli neder. Well, if you did do the Hataras Nedarim Erev Rosh Hashanah, that could be a saving grace. And if you have not yet been obligated because of the minhag, let's say before you were 17, before you first gave that Meiser, you said Hataras Nedarim, so the neder never latched on because you declared earlier that year, that anything you do three times should not have the efficacy, the power of a neder. So that's also an important leniency if you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm stuck. It could be that if you said Hataras Nedarim before you did it three times with the right mindset, knowing that it's only a minhag, that would still get you out of it.
Also,
Kol Nidre. I don't know. The halachas of Nedarim are quite complex. I don't know. Could be. I don't know. There are two girsaos of Kol Nidre. Machlok, as we've shown him, whether we do last year or this coming year, the art school is nice enough to have both of them. It could be the version that we use, that we do say, right, de ishtabana or de indarna, or there's de mishtabana or de nadarna, two different versions which relate to past tense or future tense in Aramaic. You don't have to know Aramaic, future and past tense for right now. But that might relate to your question. We won't get into that. As I sort of hinted to before, since it's a minhag, it's up to you to decide how you're going to follow it through. You can impose certain stipulations on how you want to accept it upon yourself. We're going to see soon that maybe the raw halachas of Meister should only go in a certain direction. Maybe you should only use the money for certain things. But maybe if you make some kind of stipulation, since again, I'm not obligated to, it's just a minhag, since you're going to make that stipulation, you could make it according to a stipulation, that I want to use the money in a broader way than a strict miser definition would allow. We're going to talk about that later when we talk about where you could give the monies to. For example, could you give your miser money to our shul? Could you give the miser money to pay for a kiddush? For membership dues, for a regular donation, could you give my some money to support the Erev, support the mikvah, support Yad Sarah, to support the Bikur Cholim? These are all questions that we'll talk about, not right now. Yes. That's a very specific question. The answer is Matanos Avyonim, we'll see soon, cannot be from my some money. But anything extra that you give beyond the minimum of Matanas Avyonim could be from Eisner money. We'll see soon why. So hang in there. Let's talk about, before we talk about the halachas of how do you give, what do you give for, let's talk about who has to give. I have a very strong feeling that there are quite a few people in this room that might not be obligated in Eisner Ksafim at all. Rule number one regarding Eisner is that only somebody who has enough money, as I mentioned half an hour ago, for themselves to live, perhaps, let's not say for the year, but somebody who has enough money to cover all their expenses and is self-sufficient, only such a person is obligated in Meister. Of course, even such a person who is not self-sufficient and you're completely, you know, beneficiaries of your parents and taking out loans to live and to pay your rent, even you have to give tzedakah, which is a third of a shekel per year, but most of you probably do that. But in terms of meiser only, and this is going to be an important thing, only if you have enough money for yourselves. Let's say you're taking out I don't want to get into student loans for college because that's a little more sophisticated, or graduate school. Let's say you're in law school, you're in PT school, and you need to take out besides the college loans, $15,000 so that you could just pay your rent, buy your food, and whatever else. So you are a person who does not have enough money to live on. You have to borrow money so that you could live. If that's the case, you don't have enough money to live on, you are not obligated, even though you have a job, and you're earning a little bit on your own, you are not obligated to pay Meiser. In fact, why are you paying Meiser when you're not, A, you should be paying yourself Meiser because you don't have enough money, and B, pay off the people who you owe money to. Well, here it's a little different because the banks are very happy for you to keep the money and not pay it so quickly. That's how they make their billions of dollars. But nonetheless, if you don't have enough money to live on, then you're not obligated to give Meister. College loans are a little bit more complicated because in a certain sense you could say, hey, I'm in medical school now. Let's not say America. I'm in law school. In law school, I have a part-time paralegal job, you know, two-thirds time paralegal job from 9 to 4, and I go to college, you know, law school at night. From 9 to 4, I earn $55,000 a year. It's a very nice job. $55,000 a job as a paralegal from 9 to 4 p.m. But law school is $40,000, and I need $20,000 to live. So I definitely cover my $20,000 to live, but that extra, whatever it is, $25,000, $30,000, I'm taking out student loans for. This, on one hand, I think Rav Shachter would say, such a person doesn't have to give Meiser because ultimately you're taking out loans. You're only living, getting by, again, with your college or graduate school expenses, with loans. But I'm wondering if college loans are a little bit different because college loans are sort of like, it's not like a regular loan where somebody's waiting for you to pay them back, A, and B, you're borrowing because you don't have money to live on. It's sort of like just part of an investment. And the investment is you're going to, you know, borrow $30,000 now to cover your law school so that, you know, in 3 years you'll be making $200,000 a year and you'll be able to pay it back like nothing, hopefully, if the market gets you a job. So if you're talking about, if you have enough money to live, but it's just the college loans that you have, I would suggest ask a shaila. If you have to take out money so that you could pay for your daily expenses, again, you're in college full-time, you're in grad school full-time, you're in medical school full-time, and you can't have a job to earn your living expenses, and you take out a loan for those living expenses, you don't have money to live, and you are not obligated in Meiser whatsoever. No reason for you to pay Meiser. The Chazon Ish and Rav Shachter also suggest that such people who are not in a position right now such that they could give Meiser, it's suggested that they should take a little notepad and write down how much theoretically, let's say he has a job, she has a job that she tutors, you know, twice a week and earns $150 a week, $100 a week. Still not to cover their expenses, but it is a little bit. So they don't have to give their Meiser, but they should write down, you know, I made $8,000 this year, I owe $800 to Meiser, so when I will be self-sufficient in 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, whatever the number will be, then I'll give my $800 when I have the cash flow that makes that available for me. What comes up very often, I guess more when you're younger, less so as you get older and older, your parents are supporting you. So if they give you money for your expenses, if they do give you money for your expenses, whether you're in elementary school, high school, college, whatever the situation is, if your parents are giving you money, so it's hard to say that you should be taking their money. Let's say they give you over the year, let's say they give you $30, $40 a week for your clothing and your food and your books and whatever it is, adds up to, let's say, $3,000 a year, $4,000 a year. So it's pretty, you could say rude for you to say, Dad, I know last year was $4,000, but I decided to become religious this year, and it's going to be $4,400 this year. You have to raise my allowance 10%, because 10% of your money, I've decided that I want to be mekabel upon myself a minhag tov to give your money to tzedakah so I could be like our heiliga avos, Avraham Yitzchak and Yaakov. So if he was a good father, he'd probably slap you across the face and tell you to speak to a rabbi, which you should, and he'll probably tell you that what right do you have to make your father or mother give you more money because you want to be from when you're not even obligated. Okay, so there you probably wouldn't be. Let's say it's a different kind of situation. Let's say a dad, you know, is very comfortable, a mother's very comfortable, and they want to give their child, let's say, an allowance. Do with it as you don't just need it for your expenses. I'll buy you your clothing, I'll pay for your food, I'll give you money for lunch and for dinner, but I'm going to give you an allowance. You could play video games, you could, you know, go on a vacation after a few weeks with it, you could put it in a stock fund, whatever you want to do, you could use it. So that might be very different, because there the money is actually a gift to you, And gifts, yes, 100% are obligated in Meiser, just like earnings. So that's the situation of an allowance, which I think we all wish we got, or more of. That, maybe you would be obligated to give Meiser. Let's talk about somebody who has enough money for their everyday expenses. They can make it, they live the year, they have enough money to pay their bills, to pay all their bills, even their tuition bills. But all of a sudden, one year, they have an extra expense. They're marrying off a kid, they, God forbid, have a medical bill that they have to deal with. So such a person who has enough money for all their expenses, but for whatever external reason, there's an extra cost that falls upon them, such a person, let's do it the opposite way. Such a person is allowed to take tzedakah. Such a person is allowed to take tzedakah because even though they have enough money to live on, they don't have enough money to live on with this expense that has befallen them. Therefore, they're allowed to take tzedakah. Now, if I say that they're allowed to take tzedakah, do you think that they're going to be obligated to give meiser? Obviously not. So again, they pay all their bills. They're earning $130,000 a year. They pay their bills, they pay all their tuitions, but because of this, God forbid, medical bill, that just whatever they had, it's not enough. So they don't have to give meiser this year. I'll just finish this part. Maybe we'll talk for a few more minutes. Does a katan, if you have a katan, should you, as a parent or as an older sibling, give your younger brother or sister's money or your child's money to meiser? So the answer is no. If it's their money, so they're not obligated in meiser. It's not an obligation, even on a gadol. It's a minhag. So no need to give a katan's money, but of course you should try to educate them like we educate children in all mitzvos to give. And to connect to last week, we talked about goyim and the mitzvos of a goy. Is a goy obligated in meiser? Well, meiser probably not, but is there any fear for a goy to give tzedakah? What do you say? Is there a mitzvah for him to give tzedakah? An obligation, let's say. Is there an obligation to give tzedakah? Whatever you say, you're going to be right. The Ran says, yes, there is a chiyuv. The Rambam seems like there's no chiyuv. That's in terms of goyim. The last thing I want to talk about today is how do you calculate your meiser money? Excuse me. So this is a very important point. Let's say, just for argument's sakes, and as a blessing for us, that we earn $100,000 a year. Okay, $30,000 goes straight to Uncle Sam, so I'm left with $70,000. In order for me to go to work, I take the train every day, Metro North and the LIRR, and a bus and then the ferry. That knocks me down from 70 to 60. Then, of course, since I'm away from the house, I spend another 15 for my babysitter, my kids at home, so I'm down to 60 to 45. Then, since I work, I need somebody to help clean the house because I'm taking all those different modes of transportation. It costs me an extra $5,000 because I'm working for cleaning help, so I'm down to 40. And, of course, since I travel so much, I have to have a good quality knapsack that could withstand all my traveling and my busing and trains. So that's another $500. And then, because I'm a traveling salesman, I have to have a sharp suit, a fancy tie that I didn't spill water on, and sharp clothing. And that's another $3,000 a year. So now where am I? 42? What else could we do? And of course, I need my salesman malpractice insurance. That's another $2,000 a year. I'm down to 40. So I ask you, how much does this person have to give meiser on? $100,000 or $40,000? The answer is on $40,000. In other words, what I'm saying is that your obligation to give meiser, what a person hopefully should, will, God willing, give meiser, is after all the expenses that are incurred for the parnasa itself, including taxes, including babysitting, including the cleaning help that's necessary because they work, meaning if you like having a cleaning lady every day and you figure, hey, anyway, it's 10% less than it really costs because I could subtract it from meiser, that's not good. But if you were home all day, you'd have cleaning help once a week. And now that you're not home all day, you have to have cleaning help 3 times a week. So 2/3 of your cleaning bill, you could deduct. You could say it's like I don't earn that money that I give the cleaning lady. I don't earn that money, therefore I don't have to give that money to Meiser. Babysitting, transportation, insurance as a professional, malpractice insurance. I know my wife is a vision therapist and she also has to pay $75 a year for her insurance. I'm sure any of you who are therapists or social workers or psychologists might have a similar liability insurance that your agency requires you to have. So it's as though you're earning $75 less and therefore you saved yourself $7.50 because you came to my shir. Baruch Hashem. Any equipment that you need for work, all that also is going to be, you don't have to give Meister on that. That saves quite a bit of money, especially the taxes and the babysitting and the transportation. Those are quite, you know, if you add all that up, that could be, you know, 40% of your earnings. You know, in some cases a lot more than 40%, in some cases a little bit less, but that's going to cut down your Meister bill. What about I earn my money, and we'll finish with this point. Let's say I earn $100,000, and all my expenses knock me down to 60. So I have $60,000. Now of that 60, I spend $10,000 to feed my family. I spend $20,000 for my apartment, so I'm down to 60 to 50 to 30. I spend $10,000 to clothe my family, down to 20. So how do we decide how much Meiser I have to give? Do I do it based on the 60,000 post-taxes and babysitter? Or do I take into account the extra money that I spent for my family expenses, the rent, the food, the clothing? So here, almost all the posts can assume that you can't deduct your personal family expenses. You have to give Meiser based on your earnings, after all of the earning costs, like taxes and babysitting and transportation, you have to give Meiser based on the $60,000 that you have. So you give $6,000. Of the $54,000 that are left, then you can feed your family, clothe your family, take care of all your expenses and pay your electricity bills. There is, however, one obscure opinion of the Knesset HaGedolah. He's one of the small commentaries on the side in the margin of the Shulchan Aruch, Simon Reish Mem Tes, and two different versions in the Aruch HaShulchan, how to read the Aruch, what the Gersa in the Aruch HaShulchan is, who says that you only have to give Meiser on your money after your family expenses, which comes out to be very odd. I was speaking to Rabbi Bleich, or J.D. Bleich, who teaches here this morning after Shacharis, and the way he said it is, the only people who are, if you hold like this opinion, again, you earn 100, 40 is knocked out for expenses like taxes, transportation, babysitting, you have 60 left. 50 of them go for your expenses, 10,000 you're putting into your savings account, or your pension, whatever it is. So you only have to give Meiser on that $10,000. You only have to give $1,000 of Meiser, according to this opinion of the Knesset HaGedolah. So as Rabbi Bleich put it, the only people who are ever going to give Meiser, according to this opinion, are people who are the very wealthy, who really have, after all the bills are being paid, you still have extra money. You know, nowadays maybe there are more people like that, but for most of history, there are very few people who actually had savings. So we don't rely on this. We assume that you have to pay your Meiser based on your earnings before your personal expenses. So taxes, you can deduct. Transportation, babysitting, you can deduct. Your personal family expenses, rent, electricity, we'll talk about tuition, whether tuition is a deduction or not, that we'll talk about next time, God willing. That you should pay for, you should be considering yourself making $60,000 and give $6,000 of Meiser. And from the $54,000 remaining, that's where you'll spend your money for your living. With one twist, with two twists. Let's say you're such a person that you don't really have enough to live on. You don't really have enough to live on, if you would give Meiser. I earn just enough that if I spend all of my money, then I will be able to make a living. But if I give 10% away, I'm not going to be able to pay the bills at the end of the month. So, such a person theoretically is probably pata from Meiser. But we have a better solution. Why doesn't such a person who could just barely, just make his ends meet, rely on that Knesset HaGedolah? Let's tell him, you know, you spend your money, you make $26,000, it's just enough for you to barely live. spend your $25,400 on your expenses. You have $600 left at the end of the month, at the end of the year. Okay, give your maaser on that $600. Let such a person who otherwise wouldn't be able to pay maaser at all, let her rely on this opinion, the Knesset HaGedolah, that you pay maaser only on your after expenses, whatever is left over. But otherwise, if you're not in that situation, you should give on the all of your post-tax and post-expenses earnings, pre-family expenses. One last point that's just a twist of this within this area is, let's say right now you're going to start accepting upon yourselves to give maaser k'safim, like all of you, because you all thought that it was obligatory, now you realize it's a minhag, and you're going to now accept upon yourself to start doing maaser k'safim, of course, b'neder. You could stipulate, this the Tzitz Eliezer writes, is a tremendous kula. You could stipulate that I only want to accept upon myself the minhag of maaser k'safim, like that minority opinion of the Knesset HaGedolah, who says that I only have to pay my maaser on what's coming up after all of my personal expenses. And then if you only have, let's say you earn your 100, 40 knocked off for tax and babysitting, you left the 60, 50 of them goes to my household expense, I'm less than $10,000. I could stipulate, since I'm starting right now, I've never given before, I could stipulate I'm only going to give maaser on that $10,000, and I will only give $1,000. For somebody who has to do that, I understand. If you don't have to do it, you might as well take advantage of this very special mitzvah of ubechanunina bazos, and give maaser. I don't think anybody would be worse off if they are. If you can't afford to give maaser, don't. If you can't afford to give maaser, it's in your best, very, very, very best selfish interest to give maaser properly. And until next week, God willing, we'll talk about when you make the, when's the cutoff date, when's the end of the maaser fiscal year. We'll talk about who you should give the maaser to. We'll talk about how you could use the money. Could you pay tuitions with maaser money? We'll talk about some other stipulations that you could add to your bli neder when you accept upon yourself, so that you'll be able to be very safe with your maaser giving. So I hope you all earn lots of money and can give lots and lots of tzedakah. But I did see in the postgame, as I was learning for this shir, that there's no chiyuv to earn a lot of money so that I can give more tzedakah. But either we should. I mean, we should earn a lot of money so we could. Have a wonderful evening.